Most people think that one of the worst insults you can call a woman is whore. But is there anything inherently wrong with a woman owning her own sexuality and choosing on what terms she shares sex? Instead of all the stigmatized and degrading words for women and men who make money by exchanging some kind of erotic service, we use the word sex worker. There are lots of different kinds of sex workers, from porn stars to strippers, escorts, dominatrixes, tantric massage, phone sex. And some of it's legal, but many kinds have been criminalized, and practically everything to do with sex in our sex-negative culture does have some stigma. So many fascinating people are working as sex worker advocates and activists.
This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore. Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
We have two sex work community activists with us tonight. Lily Ally teaches classes and does business work and support for sex workers. And also Maxine Holloway is starting a really exciting new program. Also has some work around the point of view, like from our own point of view, which is really neat. And I'm looking forward to sharing that as well. So, ladies, welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you. Super excited to be here.
Yeah. Lily, do you want to go first and tell us about your classes that you're teaching? Because I know that you just completed a class in the UK, but that also part of your business is doing support work for men and women in the sex industry.
Right, yeah. I started by providing more like assistant services on the business side to sex workers. I found it so exciting and fulfilling. I guess I used to do erotic service provider work myself, and then at a certain point I got really excited about providing services to the providers themselves. And so at that point I moved into like business support and assistant work for sex workers. And then more recently, because I travel quite a lot, I've had the opportunity to go to other countries where the legal situation is different.
Amsterdam, or is it different in England? I guess it is a little different in England, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's decriminalized.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not a lawyer, so I can't advise people on the legal side of it. But yeah, it's more legal somehow. Mm-hmm. It's less gray in England. I mean, the soliciting side is still illegal, but yeah, it's definitely easier to do it in England. And in Germany, like in Berlin, it's totally legal, and they have their
protections for sex workers, like not just decriminalized, but right. Actually like taxed and regulated. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and they have rights, and you know,
they have rights.
I know, crazy.
Whoa.
Right?
Whoa.
So it's quite different. Wow. But it's interesting, there's still...
And the social fabric is still in place. Right. The world seems, keeps turning.
Yeah,
weird.
It seems that way. Yeah. And it's also interesting because, you know, because of that, more people feel that they have the permission almost to go and like seek out sex work as part of having an exciting, like embodied, fantastic sex life as part of your normal life. You know, so women go and, you know, queers go, you know, people that don't normally...
You wouldn't associate with going to see sex workers. Like here, we think that only straight males go to sex workers.
Right, that are like married and like 40 to 50 and have loads of money,
right?
And
there must be something wrong with them.
Right. Because they're not getting sex at home. Well, that's the story, right?
Right. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, who sees sex workers, and what do people get out of making sex work safe and legal?
Who sees sex workers?
Yeah. And like, what do all of us get out of making sex work safe and legal? Because I mean, I don't think that decriminalizing sex workers would only help sex workers. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think it would only help their clients. I think it would help a lot of people. I mean, because it would really change the way that sexuality is seen in our culture. But I think even more than that, I think it would it's a public health issue. I think it would make a lot of things more safe.
Right. Yeah. Because I often find that, I don't know about you, but a lot of the people that I meet, they actually see their role as an educational role. It's like a one-on-one coaching almost for their clients. So I feel like if that was acknowledged, then it would really like support the culture around sexuality. It kind of de-shame, I think.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a lot of the times, I mean, my experience is when people have sought out things that they're not getting in other places, whether that's for circumstantial reasons or it's a specific fetish.
Right.
And it's often I feel like people tell me things in my line of work that they are only telling me and they can't share that with anyone else. So I think
right.
the de-shaming is really important.
Like, this is who I really am kind of
yeah.
thing.
And it's just like, you know, so you want to get your balls tied up and tickled with a feather. Like,
that's okay.
Spins. Like,
yay.
It's okay. But right. there's such shame right. about these things that they feel like they
can't have or can't admit to.
And shame is such a heavy thing for a community to carry, really. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all sorts of terrible, like, negative things, I think, that happen, like, because of that, you know, people
and
carrying
increased
shame.
Violence.
Right, I
and
think so.
And increased, maybe some sex workers may not ask for as much money or may not ask for as much respect from their clients or even from their peers or their partners. You know, they may feel guilty about doing sex work, and mm-hmm. it just depends on what kind of level of empowerment that they're able to support for themselves, you know, and
right.
that really can vary depending
right.
on
and
the
it's
situation.
Really important that that sex workers see and honor their work as a profession, because, you know, when legal
exactly.
change comes finally, you know, I feel like the profession needs to be ready and robust, and people mm-hmm. need to be kind of ready to go so that there is a profession and a kind of an economy there and working that's robust to sort of be ready, you know what
right.
I mean?
And I think also that there's this way that sexuality has been like almost curated by sex workers. Like, throughout history, most people haven't been talking about sex. They haven't been practicing different ways of having healthy sex, and they certainly haven't been doing very many you know, like female ejaculation or healthy boundaries or negotiation. Or, I mean, there's so many different things that sex work brings to sexuality. So, like, that sex workers can teach us
mm-hmm.
how to put a condom on with your mouth.
Right, right, totally.
Really useful stuff.
Right. And I feel like I've learned so much about my sexuality through my own sex work. Like, I never spent that much time with my vagina and didn't really know all these amazing things it could do, like
right.
squirting.
Whoa.
Until I was being paid to
right.
you know, masturbate on film for right. a living. So I feel like I've learned all these amazing things that my body can do, and I'm a much better negotiator. I'm able to articulate things about my sexuality, other people's sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you gain all these skills as a sex worker. You know, you're running your own business, you are doing your own marketing, mm-hmm. you are providing service. There's all of these skills that aren't really acknowledged or
absolutely,
validated
yeah.
in society.
Yeah, sex workers are so often pioneers, like trailblazing, you know, finding their own way. You know, they're such a phenomenal breed, I think, like
yeah.
really.
Which is why your work is so important, actually supporting individual sex workers. I mean, you really help people do marketing and the trailblazing and the supportive aspects. But also, Maxine, your work is about that, too, because mm-hmm. it's about creating community.
Yeah, I'm actually, just in the past couple months, I've been working with a colleague of mine. Her name is Ava Solanas, and we've started a Bay Area sex workers group. And it's kind of like a support group, a social group, and a way for us all to collaborate and work together. What it's kind of ended up shaping up like is the first part of the meeting, we're trying to meet at least once a month, is either like a workshop or a Skillshare. We're
and
interested
it's taught
in,
by peers.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. And it's all self-taught, and you know, we're interested in talking about things like, you know, how do you navigate your personal life with mm-hmm. your sex work?
Yeah, that can be really tricky.
Yeah,
because it does kind of a sex affect your sex life.
Absolutely. And it's really hard to talk to people that aren't sex workers about that. Not all my friends are sex workers. It's important to have that type of support when you're trying to navigate your personal relationships.
Right.
Different skill shares, like, I know I want to learn more about BDSM or squirting, or, you know, want to learn how to walk in high heels or do drag king performances. Like, we all come from all very different backgrounds and areas of expertise, so we're getting together and trying to, like, trade information.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is kind of just more social. What I really like about this group is it's kind of bridging a lot of, there's all these little pockets of sex workers here in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
There's escorts, there's porn performers, there's webcam people, there's the queer porn scene, there's the hairy girl scene. And it's getting all these people at the same table and talking. And it's been really awesome. Like, I've made new friends. I'm collaborating with people on different things. So it's really bringing a lot of people together. And the third and final part of our group is a thing that we also want to do is be able to support each other financially. And what we're doing is every month, or maybe every other month, seeing how it goes, but we're doing a live sex performance called Come and Glitter.
That's such a great name, Come and Glitter.
Yeah.
So Come and Glitter. Shiny, like shiny.
Oh, it's going to be real shiny. It's a kind of like an explicit burlesque or art performance. And because what's important to us is like we want to encourage the community to be making more money, but on our terms, like not doing a show for a big studio or for a
right,
big corporation.
Where you actually it's make like the money rather
yeah,
than someone
like,
else.
Oh, you have to look like this and right. this kind of body hair and this type of performance and this type of sex. Like, no, this is however we want to
Because of course they dictate how
it.
You want the body hair. Yeah. They're like, shave all your stuff off.
And yeah. They're like, oh, we know it's the best way to have it. Like, we know what the most sexy thing is, and we know the best way for you to make money.
And
no.
and they don't. I mean, they have the right to do that as their absolutely. Business, but... this is a way to kind of empower us and let us do it on our terms. So I'm really excited. Our first one is going to be on February 25th at Viracocha.
Where's Viracocha again?
Viracocha's on Valencia and 21st.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So neat. You buy a membership to become a member of Come and Glitter, and then you get invited to this party.
Well, and it's explicit. So it's not like you can just have... You know, it's not something that you can just have as a public event. Otherwise, you might get in trouble with the ABC or something.
Exactly. And that's like a whole nother sex worker starts saying like, oh, like we couldn't just sell tickets to this because that is illegal.
Right.
Yeah, so there's tricky. All these little loopholes you got to do. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a really fun night. We have like there's a cocktail named after each performer. And if you get a VIP ticket, you'll have that cocktail brought by performer of your choice. But I'm excited. It's a good
fun.
It's going to be a fun thing. And it's a way for us to all kind of work together and be creative and have like, oh, what kind of performance do you want to do? Like, whatever wildest fantasy that you've been wanting to put on a stage, like, do it. You have free reign to be creative and awesome. So
Super that's exciting. Called Come and Glitter, right?
Yes.
And it's C-U-M and Glitter. Uh-huh. Of course it is. Okay, so Come and Glitter. And then you also do this POV work, point of view.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
Madison Young has a network of websites called the Feminist Porn Network. And they're all adult, lovely websites. And I'm the webmistress of the womenspov.com. POV is a genre of porn, which is shot, means point of view. But this is our point of view on sex, politics, pleasure, and culture. So not only is there POV porn shot by women, there's also sexy self-portrait photo sets. That are, you know, that are self-portraits. So it's not someone else taking
not
a photo of you.
It right. is right.
you dictating how you want yourself to be presented. There's also really cool interviews and articles. I just posted an interview this morning from Kitty Stryker, who is helping with the December.
Yeah,
so she's organizing
the
December 7th. Oh, you did?
Almost
you did.
Had awesome. Her on the show, actually. No, I remember. Oh.
Well, you should get her back. She's amazing. And the December 17th, the jazz funeral
tomorrow.
For sex workers. That's it tomorrow? Yeah.
At the Center for Sex and Culture.
Center for Sex and Culture. It's from 7 to 10. It's going to be a really great night.
Well, it's interesting because I think the tradition with the remembrance for sex workers has been a lot about, you know, grieving and well, there's definitely that's going to be there and there's a place for that because I think that we all need to really experience our feelings. Mm-hmm. But also, this is going to be a jazz funeral, so it's like a celebration. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm thinking that I actually had her on the show is because she and I, after the show, went over and talked all about the jazz funeral and how she's really exciting to really transform it into something that is also a celebration.
Yeah.
And people who aren't sex workers will enjoy, you know, the music and all the sexy people, but it'll also be, you know, something that's meaningful as well.
Yeah. I'm real excited for that.
Yeah, and that's on that's Center for Sex and Culture tomorrow?
Yeah, Center for Sex and Culture, which is on Mission Street between 9th and 10th.
Right, and their new location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Carol Queen's going to be there, Annie Sprinkle, all kinds of lovelies.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Lily Ally's work. We already talked a little bit about the class that you teach, but I want to kind of break that down a little bit further, how you support sex workers, some of the different kinds of people that come to your class and what you teach.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm really finding that, as you've just like articulated super beautifully, like sex workers, they don't need teaching, you know. They're mostly like trailblazers that have had to figure out so much on their own around business and marketing and all these different like business strategies and managing their work and personal life in this unique way. It's not that I'm like teaching these, giving them all this information. It's more that like actually connecting sex workers allows this phenomenal like well of information to become a resource for all these, for such a variety of different people. And So the last class that I taught, is there was a really wide range of people there. Most of my clients, like my one-on-one clients, are from the BDSM world. At the workshops, it's really interesting because there's a huge, like, so diverse. There's people that come from porn, and people from lots of other countries were there when I taught in London. So watching, just seeing people share information. I guess I'm beginning to develop this way of teaching these kinds of workshops, or facilitating these kinds of workshops, which is for people that really work in the body. I'm interested in thinking about their business as a body, or as a body of knowledge, and we just work through the body, almost kind of like a chakra system. We start at the bottom with, you know, the issues that come out of, like, basic safety and security, money, yeah, and things like that, and then we work up through the body, through things like how is your community, and then how is your marketing, and how is your, for some reason I think it really works well for people as a sort of framework of which to share their experiences with each other, and it's really rich. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different fun exercises that I'm figuring out with people, and figuring out which ones work and which ones are most useful for people. So it's really exciting, and I'm excited about, I guess, somatic ways of teaching business. I'm enjoying, like, trying that out on different groups of people.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of interesting to, I mean, I know that you're not really going up through the chakras literally, because this is a way of looking at your business.
Right, right.
But, I mean, I can imagine that if you're looking at sex work and you're taking it, I mean, first you want to be, you know, you want to be secure and you want to be taken care of, and then you want to have, you know, personal power. That's your will. Right. That's your stomach chakra, right?
Right.
And then as you would move up, for it to be heart-centered.
Uh-huh.
And then to communicate it well.
Exactly, yeah.
And then
your vision, like, where are you going in your business?
Going, right.
And then, like, what is your ultimate purpose?
Right, what's your meaning? What's your spiritual meaning? Neato! Yeah. I love that you would want to think about all seven of those, or eight of those elements, because sometimes when we think about business, we just think about money.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so it's nice to have that grounded in all the things that sustain you.
Right, right. And it's interesting,
because that's really important, especially with sex work, that you're not as sustained by the culture, because sex work is criminalized or stigmatized, mm-hmm, or, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's good to think about the chakras just as a system, you know, rather than, because sometimes,
right, just
like,
as an idea.
Right, as an idea, mm-hmm, rather than like a belief system or something. Because the tantricas come and they're like, oh, you speak my language. But the doms come, you know, and they're right, a little more like, it's somehow different. So, but it actually, like, it works very well just as a basic language, rather than, it's not a deep belief system. It's just a system through which you
it's
can touch all the areas of your
check.
Business. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And different people associate different, you know, chakras with different parts of their business. Like, where does money sit in your business body? Like, is it right at the bottom? Is it in your heart? You know, is it, like, different people have kind of interesting different associations with it. So
okay,
it's really just a starting point to talk from.
Let's talk a little bit about the connections between BDSM and Tantra. And just for those who are listening and aren't sure, as we're bandying about all these words, DOMS and BDSM, BDSM is short for bondage, domination, submission, and sadism and masochism. And I think there's an extra D in there somewhere. But it means basically, like, kinky, or being dominant and submissive. And so people who work in that field, they don't often come into contact with Tantra and chakra systems and all that stuff, but they're so related. I mean, in BDSM, you have top space and subspace, which have shocking similarities to, like, a state that you would get in meditation, like enlightenment in the moment, whatever it is. You're really, really, really present. And so it's interesting to bring BDSM closer to Tantra. I just see how, like, that could
totally
be so nourishing, mm-hmm, especially.
Such a rich crossover, right?
Right.
Exactly. And
exactly.
It's amazing how many people I'm meeting from all these different communities that really want to cross over their skills. Like, I meet a lot of people from one world that are like, oh, I wish I knew some more, like, Tantra techniques, and vice, mm-hmm, versa. So I think people, in fact, didn't you say that earlier?
I don't know if I did, but I would.
Yeah. I heard you say that. Yeah.
I mean, I work at kink.com, which is a BDSM website.
Uh-huh.
And when you're saying this, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense of the ways that I, like, physically and sensationally feel things when I'm working. So
yeah,
I would definitely be very interested in learning more about,
right,
that.
And a lot of it's about just confidence and language and stuff. Because, for instance, the BDSM clients that I have and that I'm working with, they're often using, exactly like you said, they're often using a lot of very woo stuff,
mm-hmm,
but they're not calling it that. Like, they often talk a lot about energy and mm-hmm, and sometimes, you know, they talk about their their discipline as a spiritual path almost, you know. And
well, it is a way of focusing consciousness, certainly. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're in what they call a scene, which is when you're actually playing BDSM, you really have to be focused because the stakes are so high. You know, you're playing with fire. You could be literally playing with fire. Or you could just be, you know, flogging someone, hitting them, punching them in the chest. I mean, all sorts of like ways of inflicting consensual pain. I mean, of course, people take classes and make sure how to not harm someone while hurting them. But I think the idea is that when you're really working with intense BDSM, you really have to be that much more focused so that you're really paying attention to the experience of your bottom, so that it almost is, you know, your only presence, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not like thinking of what am I going to eat for dinner, or I'm really concerned about, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know?
And it is a real art. And that's why, I mean, like some of the really amazing people working in the city, you've had some of them on here, like Minax and, mm-hmm. you know, the people representing. Those people are like such amazing artists at what they
Eve
do.
Minax,
you know,
really is an amazing artist. And she has so much energy. And I love it when she kind of talks a little bit about Tantra. You know what I mean?
Right,
and like
right.
the you can kind of see the crossover in life energy and sexual energy. They're just power, you know, and all of these powerful people. People who know how to wield their sexuality, and they, people who are sex workers always impress me because they can get turned on in situations that I would be like, excuse me, turn off the lights. I need to get a warm blanket. Right. Why are you people staring at me? I need some lube. You know what I mean? Like all this stuff. This is weird. You know, I would never be able to sustain it. I might not be. I don't know. I just might probably wouldn't be able to sustain a turn. But look, those are the professionals.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they are turned on in situations that are weird or unusual. I shouldn't stigmatize them. But anyway, do you know, like, so it's, that's what I'm always impressed by, that they, and you have so much sexual energy or so much compassion that operates as sadism, that you're actually able to provide something so special for someone that you may not even know, you know, just because that's something that they really want, you know, and it could be in lots of different situations, you know, like someone who is disabled and doesn't get to, you know, have, I'm going to use finger quotes, but normal sex with normal people. But, you know, what is normal? I mean, I'm sure that BDSM sex workers like really have to provide special services for people that they feel like they can't get anywhere else. Like they can't ask their, I'm going to use finger quotes again, real partner, to provide a flogging or anal or, you know, whatever it is.
I see that a lot working on webcam at kink.com. Like I'm in contact with people from all over the world. And that's what they tell me. They're like, I don't feel like I can talk to my partner about this. Like, you know, I like to watch you zap yourself with electricity for 45 minutes. And it's, as crazy as that sounds, it's like almost this really special exchange with that person, like which kind of goes back to the idea of like that energy exchange. And
because you're exchanging energy with them, like they're saying, wow, this is so special and I really love this and this is really what I want. And you're
which
like,
is
wow.
So, as like as a professional, like there's something really satisfying about that too, which I think people are like, oh, well, you're a sex worker, you have to go and do that. And it's like,
oh, no.
No, it's like I have like this sense of like satisfaction and pride that I was like able to provide that for someone and it makes them very happy.
Right. And there's also something really exciting and empowering about just going on your own journey with your sex life, you know, regardless of where you're at with your partner. Maybe you and your partner have something special and intimate and super unique to you, but you know, you're also on your own sexual journey. And maybe sometimes that means that you want to go watch someone be zapped on a camera for like 45 minutes, or maybe it means you want someone to like pretend you're a baby for like half an hour, or maybe it means you want to whatever.
Right. And but your partner doesn't have to be into that, and that doesn't have to exclude that from your sex life. And it's interesting that we believe that, like that you have this one person and the things that they're into are going to be the things that you're into, and you guys are excluded to just the things that are in
that
your
you both have
in
interest.
Common. Right. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about this idea that sex workers have to do something, because I think a lot of people that, in fact, someone said recently that whores will sleep with anyone. And that's kind of an interesting idea. They actually won't sleep with anyone. They're not going to sleep with anyone that's mean to them or rude to them, you know, non-consensually. Every sex worker chooses who they work with. Can you say more about that negotiation?
And of course, there's like a vetting and references. I think it all comes back to the idea of consent. there's so much power in the idea of consent. So as a sex worker, you're consenting to do, you know, fill in the blank. So that is a choice. That does not mean that you have to do it. It does not mean that you will do that with anyone. You're consenting in that moment, in that time, with that person.
And
it doesn't always mean that you would be like, oh, like, am I personally into like baby play? No. Would I do that with someone? I would. So that means that I'm consenting to doing this for the exchange of money. It doesn't mean that I have to be so into every single thing that I'm doing, but I'm still consenting to it. And it doesn't always have to be because that's my deepest desire. I'm consenting to it because I would like the money afterwards. And I think that's
front,
really fine.
I would say.
Well, to walk home with the money.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that, because as someone's coming into this environment, they might think, oh, sex workers are agreeing to, like, once they agree to something, they're stuck in that agreement.
I don't think so. I think that empowered sex workers, who are the people that really go into it with a, as a life calling, you know, those people are in there because it's what they were, you know, almost born to do, or, you know, they
That's
have a very
really
deep
feel.
Motivation. They have very deep skill.
They feel like
skill.
It's meaningful work.
It's creating meaning in their life. It's creating meaning in their client's life. And they're really like born to do that work, you know, and they're super skilled at it, and they're not going to do anything that is not right for them and not right for the client. So
in every moment. So
right,
if the, so if something goes wrong and there's a miscommunication and the client's like, actually, I want to humiliate you in a way that you don't want to be humiliated.
Yeah, no.
Then you can say no, right?
Also, you know, as you mentioned, you just touched on earlier, there's a screening process that happens so that the client is fairly well oriented to what they're, what the boundaries are and what they're going to receive. And the sex worker also knows a bit about the client, so they're safe and they know who's coming through the door. So I think all of those things really
and
help.
And you can even do references.
Like
provider references, other sex workers that have seen this person and say, yes, this person is safe. So there is a sense of safety there. And that's something that I think sex workers should strive to create for themselves.
Absolutely. And I would even say that if you were a client going to a sex worker and the sex worker wasn't asking you about for references and giving you a really fairly thorough sort of going over, as it were, before you came in for your session, that might not be someone that you wanted to work with.
Because Why is that?
Because you want to be working with someone who is empowered and who is, you know, really in control of their boundaries and is going to run the whole experience for you, you know, in the best way possible. And I really think that being careful about references and helping to, I just think that it's
really important. Would feel saucier and juicier if that person was empowered and doing it from a place of choice. I mean, I know that some people do kind of like the giving away of power, like if you were a professional submissive, for instance. But I think it's so much more meaningful if the professional submissive consensually submits, or anyone submits consensually. Like, it's then it's like, A, it's their choice. They're totally into it. And then when they're really, I love watching masochists get what they want. And this person's getting beaten up. And so ordinarily, if it were non-consensual, I would be totally like horrified, grossed out, and probably trying to intervene. Like, excuse me, stop doing that. But when someone's like smiling and getting the crap beaten out of them, it's so beautiful and really sexy. And it's really interesting. Like the big difference that consent makes, as you were saying earlier, Maxine.
And I think you made some really good points. And I think another thing to think about in the when talking about sex work and consent is talking about people that do survival sex work. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm very privileged in the fact that I choose to do sex work and I don't have to do that in order to eat and
make rent.
So acknowledging that some people don't have that type of choice and privilege, I think is really important. And I'm really interested in, like, you know, we are all sex workers, whether you are a prostitute on the corner or a dancer or a phone sex operator or a porn performer or whatever, like, it's all the same umbrella, and how, what that relationship is between the people that are able to choose to do that type of work and then the people that have to do that type of work. And I don't have an easy answer to that, but I think
it's a very complex issue.
Like, but I just feel like it is an issue for all of us. Like, how do you make, I think our jobs need to be kept safe
for everyone.
For everyone across the board, just really looking at, like, what could be done as a sex work
community. Like, there's not a good kind of sex worker or a bad kind of sex worker.
No, like, but like, how do we make people that aren't doing this as a choice, how do we empower them more or help them
either get out or do it in a more empowered way, or you know, whatever it is that they need to be doing it from a place of consent and empowerment.
Yeah. And having them be part of the conversation too. It's not like our job to figure it out.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. No. And that's the thing that we're all, you know, I think all trying to create, and especially you with the work that you're doing. What is the name of the support group that you're doing?
Right now it's like Come and Glitter Production.
Oh, okay.
We're just kind of calling everything Come and Glitter.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's easier to remember. And it's very sparkly.
Yeah. I'm also leading these series of discussion panels called The Other View with Femina Potens Art Gallery.
The Other View?
All about the issues of consent. We've just did a panel on BDSM and consent. And we did a panel about sex positivity within the anti-rape movement.
Mm.
And on January 26th.
You know, that's interesting. Let's talk more about that later. Go on.
Okay.
January 26th is what?
At CSC, Center for Sex and Culture, we're doing sex work and consent. And it's a really interesting intersection of different type of sex workers and just talking about how consent factors into all of our jobs and how we can work together for sex workers' rights to make all of our jobs more, you know, enjoyable, lucrative, safe, all those important things.
Fabulous. So you said something really powerful, which is making the anti-rape movement more sex positive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm teaching classes at City College about rape and domestic violence, and they, you know, like sometimes I get these cards back, like comment cards, and they're like, I learned that sex is bad. And I'm like, no. You know what I mean? Like, rape is bad.
Rape is not sex.
Yeah, exactly. Rape is not sex. It's about power. And of course, we try to explain all that thing.
Yeah.
When we try to be sex positive and talk about what are the ways that we have healthy sex? It's consensual. It's fun for both people. It's safer. You know, what are some examples of safer sex? You know, and we do that both at the college level and at the high school level. And, you know, we really break it down. You know, you don't have to have sex, but if you are having sex or you're having some kind of physical intimacy, how do you do that in a healthy way? But unfortunately, because we're always talking about, well, okay, rape is about power, and let's break down the dominant culture paradigm that supports the imbalances, the power imbalances, the gender imbalances, and the sex imbalances that create a rape culture. Like, how do we perpetuate rape in our culture, and how do we stop it? You have 55 minutes and 30 14-year-olds. So it doesn't always, you know, it doesn't always get communicated that sex is...
Thank God someone is asking those questions, Monica. Thank you. Thank you for doing that work.
Yes.
It's my pleasure. It's also my stress. But, you know, I'm just totally into it.
Right.
So what
are... You're a masochist.
Well, I'm more of like, I'm so, if I find change and I find like actually communicating things, like if someone says, oh my God, you have to have sex with me because I'm going to get blue balls. If the other person is able to say, no, actually you can cure blue balls by masturbating into a Kleenex in the other room. Here's a Kleenex. There's the other room. I'll see you in 5 minutes. I learned that from Monica. Then you don't even have to remember. You learned it from me. Just as long as you know it and can use that information in the future, I'm going to be like, ah!
Totally.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So when you're teaching a class about rape and domestic violence, it can be so heavy and so depressing, you know, but I want relationships to be healthy and I want sex to be fun. And, you know, how do you make discussions about rape or rape prevention sex positive? Because it's not that we want people to not have sex. It's just that we want them to have healthy sex.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's hard because I feel
super
like it's like a bigger societal problem.
Uh-huh.
Because people think that, like, oh, if you're...
And what does sexy look like in our culture?
Yeah.
Like, there's this whole, like, power, gender, what is sexiness? What does a sexy woman look like? Does she look powerful?
Yeah. See, it's never just about one thing. It goes into, like, media and our sexuality and religion and how we're raised. And economics and class privilege and racism.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's all of those
It
problems.
All intersects and works together and creates like these little oppressive dynamics that we really have to like deconstruct. It's interesting. We don't even think about how hierarchy and scarcity interact in our sex life. It's one thing for it. Okay. Yeah. There's an oppressive environment and there's racism and sexism. But then how does racism and sexism affect the gender war? You know, the battle of the sexes that we're all like, I don't want to play with my clitoris. I'm embarrassed. How does that have to do with hierarchy in our culture? Mm. Well, you know, suppression of female sexuality, da 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 da, right?
It's interesting.
It's so exciting to have like professional sex workers talking in all of those different like areas. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting to hear about the work that you're doing and the ways that it's touching these different communities, you know, that might not otherwise normally hear, you know, your voices because of the criminal situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's super important. I also have a client who's created this, I guess it's an organization now actually, which is called Whore Speak, and they go into universities or higher education institutions normally, but various different institutions, and they talk just straight, so people can just ask them things. So it's just like a straight talking situation, and people can ask them anything. So they can ask them things about their own personal sex life, you know, to a sex worker professional, or they can ask them things about the industry. And I think it's just, you know, they're not they're not like big theory people, but they are people that are living the life, and so they just have very frank conversations about what the work is like.
I think that demystification is really important, because there's exactly. So I think that's a lot of the problems about sex workers' rights, is there is this stigma. People don't know. So because they don't know, there's this common mythology that like sex workers are like this, porn stars are like this,
that they're devalued or degraded.
Yeah.
You know, that they're only doing it because they have to.
That they are, you know, that they're damaged as a child. I have a drug or alcohol problem. I don't respect my body. Demystifying those like blows people's minds.
Right. They're like, no, I totally love my body. Look what I can do with it.
Right.
Yeah. Like I spoke at a human sexuality class at City College this summer, and it was just kind of like, sex work, this is what it is, and this is what my job is like. Does anyone have any questions? Because they were talking about like commercial sex. Like the Q&A went on for an hour and a half. Like the class ended, but they would have asked like 1,000
questions.
People
want to know so much. Yeah.
And then they come up to you, they're like, wow, you're just like, you don't seem like someone that would do porn. And they think they're giving you this big compliment. Right. And it's just like, wow, that is like perpetuating the stigma and really insulting.
Right.
Like, because I can...
Because I can speak intelligently, you couldn't possibly
be doing
porn.
I'm not addicted to heroin. Like.
Yes, that's the stigma that they have with sex.
But
work, right?
I think it's really important to, and that, I mean, that's a whole other thing about like the being things being illegal is like it's free to talk about things and let someone know that you are well-spoken and a sex worker, because you could be criminalized for that. So I think it's harder to be public and demystify, but I think like things like the horse speak are really important.
Yeah, I think it's a real gift to have those voices at the table. I mean, it's not just important, it's a real gift because of the risk those people take, you know.
Definitely. Because of
even one-on-one sex workers are educators. I mean, how many sex workers are some people's first sexual experiences? In that way, I think that I've learned so much from sex workers. We talked a little bit about some of the stuff that we've learned from sex workers earlier, you know, squirting and discussion of boundaries and like the whole screening thing. I never knew how important and involved screening was, but it's also kind of like an energetic thing. Like they can just tell from talking to someone for 5 minutes on the phone whether or not this person is going to try to push their boundaries when they get in the door or not. You know, and it's really interesting, like, okay, what do you listen to and what sorts of questions are people asking and how forthcoming with information are they, you know? And are they going to be like, here's the keys to my car. Of course you can trust me. I'm going to write you a check. That's someone that you cannot trust.
Yeah.
That's not going to work out very well. So let's talk a little bit about the work that you're doing one-on-one. How do you charge for your business? How does your business model work? Do you charge for time? And what sorts of services do you provide for sex workers?
Yeah, I charge for time. That's kind of a legal reason that I do that, because I didn't want to be someone who is like, pimping in any way, pandering. So I am more like an assistant. And
Because if you charged a percentage or something, it would be pimping or pandering.
Right.
And also it's kind of a more fair business model.
Absolutely.
Like you're not
involved
in how many people they see, or like if your job was screening people, like you would have a bigger incentive to say yes to people that maybe were not as fun.
Exactly.
You know, if there's no incentive for you to have people that were not necessarily high quality, you might be more selective.
Right.
Exactly. Because it's just your time.
Exactly. Yeah. normally on a regular basis, like once a week we have a meeting. And I really love doing stuff like business systems, like helping people set up a business account and like get their finances in order and find a tax person and
like organizing your money. Because right. I think one of the things that some people who aren't in sex work don't know about sex work is that you might make a lot of money, but it takes a lot of money to be in sex work. Like, you really have to spend a lot of money on your appearance. There's a lot of travel involved. Having an in-call location, like having some place for a client to visit you, might be an extra expense. You may not want them at your house. You may have to get a hotel room. You know, how do you book people to make it the best use of your money? I imagine that it can be really difficult. And if you're just, you know, using cash for everything and not budgeting, you know, you might be spending a lot of your money.
Yeah. I find that often people put most of their money straight back into the business, actually, and are not necessarily tracking that. And so I like to help people really make decisions about what it's a good idea to spend money on. Like, you know, how can you help the client feel like they're having, well, how can you give the client like a really special experience, you know? What ways can you spend money in order to really facilitate that?
Like, how can you give value to the client's experience, the John or whatever? How do you give value to the client's experience without having to like have your whole body waxed for $100 and I don't know what else you spend money on, but probably special outfits. Like, how do you do that with energy rather than consumer goods? Interesting. And do you also like talk about savings and retirement and that sort of thing? Because I also imagine that if you're investing all of your money back into your business and spending it on things, that it might be hard for you to actually quit or retire someday.
I think that's so important. You know, especially there's something really that I'm interested in, which is like aging in the business and how you can become seen as, you know, because people have these incredible bodies of knowledge, skill sets, and so, and there's a question about whether they want
and
to
bodies
keep,
of energy also,
and whether they want to keep providing, and do they want to start providing to different people perhaps, or do they want to become educators or mentors for the next generation, or do they want to write books about what they've done? You know, it's really, it's an exciting place to be, but it can be a place of like kind of fear, like, oh my God, I'm getting old, I can't, you know, everyone's going to hate me or something, but that's really not the case. So I find that place a very interesting place to be with someone
that's
and
really
help
cool.
support people through. It's really, that's exciting.
Well, there's this idea about what is sexy, right? Like that's that idea about women have to be young to be sexy, which is not true and really toxic. You know, people believe that, oh, I'm only marketable for this amount of time and whatever. And I think that especially as people get more knowledgeable and have greater personal power and use that to have sexual, like I've seen Eve Minax do the most sexy thing with a tiny little pickle. You know what I mean? And it's a pickle, right? It's not like some sexy
her
thing.
Workshop. I've been there.
Oh my God, the splashing. Does anyone know what splashing is? It's when you cover someone's body with like edible, delicious, messy things.
Yeah.
And so it's like very sensuous and like sugary, probably, but also very like, visceral and like chocolate covered. Yeah. But so it's not about what you look like, and it's not about the ideal of sexuality that's kind of sold to us. It's more about like power and like confidence and how you can move, how you can generate energy, which, you know, tends to be a little bit like woo woo. Oh, I'm generating sexual energy right now. But like, it's true. Like when you, when someone really feels something and believes it and it's like, I can turn you on. You're like, oh, I feel that actually. You know, Dossie Easton really isn't like a traditional sex worker, I wouldn't say. But she made a hand signal when she was talking about fisting. She was like, I made a fist or something. And like, she's not what, you know, she's not like typically what you would consider the ideal of whatever. But she was had so much sexual power in her fist.
Totally.
I was like, damn, Dossie.
Dossie Easton, so hot. That woman is so
right,
hot.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And it's so it's not about like this idea of what is hot, what is the ideal, what is the, you know, commercially sexy. You know, it has it's more about power and how can we learn about how to have our own power?
Yeah, but people don't really talk about that and it's not discussed. And I feel like women and men are like just bombarded with commercial ways of how to become more attractive and
spray this.
I know.
Yourself.
I mean, I including myself. Like I partake in that for sure. I thought that was really interesting what you said about like creating value with things that you aren't purchasing.
And you aren't
really
spraying onto yourself.
Thing.
You know, not ways of taking away from your authenticity or hiding something about
and
yourself.
And that doesn't mean you can't like love hot shoes and want to wear makeup and but like knowing where and why and where those boundaries
and
lie
having
for yourself,
it be a conscious choice, I think is super important.
Mm-hmm. Sex workers and all women and even men. I think men are also pressured to look a certain way, be a certain way.
Yeah. Well, that whole masculine ideal, you know, and also I think that they get a lot of information about how they're supposed to feel about women's bodies and looks and or they feel like they have to be attracted to women or, you know, like all the messages that, that men and women get.
Yeah, I've been like meeting all of these girls from like the hairy girl porn.
Tell us more about hairy girl porn.
I have not heard of hairy girl porn. What is
tell me about
I just saw the website today for the first time because I met all these awesome people at our meeting and God, I wish I could remember the website. Not Weeby Harry. That's Weeby Sushi. We're Harry.
Oh, so good.
I'll find it before then.
We're here. We're Harry. We're Harry. Used to it.
And like Ava Solanas is the person who I'm my colleague who has been working on this group with, and she does Harry Girl porn.
Well, I've been noticing how many people in sex positive community aren't shaving so much anymore. Carol Queen doesn't shave. Maggie Mayhem doesn't
stop shaving for the first time.
Yeah. Exciting.
And I'm like a little, I don't know. I've actually never, ever grown my armpit hair out.
Really?
I've just always shaved it since the moment it ever occurred. And I'm just like, okay, like, what's that about? I am just trying to like examine that. Like, is that my preference or do I feel like I'm supposed to look like that?
Right.
Like, and would it be comfortable? Would it not be comfortable? Right. Would it be more comfortable?
And it's an expense and it's something that you add to your day with the shaving. You know, it's a time thing.
So yeah, I've definitely like since spending more time with Ava and like meeting all these hair girls, I'm definitely thinking more about that.
Right.
But like, and they were talking about
sexiness?
How
is it what your
so
armpit
many
looks like?
Mainstream men that are so turned on by the fact that they're hairy and they experience a lot of shame about it.
Ooh, interesting.
And like, I'm not super hairy, but I'm not bald like a lot of the models at kink.com. Mm-hmm. Like I have hair down there and I get comments on it all the time. Like I'm like, really? Like this is really hairy for you? Like they're just like, oh wow, I love that you have hair there because I don't have a landing strip. Like I have like a full, I don't know, whatever people have, like a triangle.
You have a triangle
of hair. And it blows their mind and they love it. So I think people, there's a lot of pressure for like what is not just for like for women, it's I need to fit this ideal of being sexy, and then men, you need to be attracted to what this ideal
that
of sexy
ideal
is. And when
that
verges off from the ideal, people
it gets
get
a little
shame
special,
and I don't know, I think it's really fascinating. You just, it's not okay to like what you like. I think there's a lot
I know
of,
isn't that interesting? Like that's kind of weird that we can't like what we like, and that way we couldn't even like enjoy the diversity of the not the ideal, so that that person who isn't the ideal couldn't get love too. Like what is that idea about?
Yeah, it doesn't really make any
sense. No, because like if everyone really liked just what their freaky like was, and then everyone was able to be their freaky self, like people who liked curly hair, like not everyone would be straightening their hair. And then the people who liked curly hair could get what they wanted. Right?
Right.
It would be like, oh, so much more like, I don't know, there would be both more diversity and more love.
Happiness.
More joy.
Sexiness.
Yeah, right,
pressure.
Which is what we're into.
Yay.
So we're talking with Lily Ally and Maxine Holloway. We've been talking a lot about sex worker activism. You know, what does it mean to, you know, celebrate sex and sex work and empowered sexuality, empowered feminine sexuality? What would it mean if whore weren't an insult, or working as a sex worker weren't, or working as a prostitute or a call girl weren't illegal? There's a lot of different kinds of sex work, if some of them are legal. Let's talk a little bit about maybe there's a division between the kinds of legal sex work and the kinds of not legal sex work. Like, are there some people, you know, who feel like, oh, well, I'm at least not a whatever it is?
Yeah, I think that hierarchy exists. I don't think it's a true hierarchy, but I think people feel that
they believe
they're, oh, well, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm a stripper, but I don't suck dick, which then just implies
like
that you're doing
something
like that.
Like it's bad to suck dick, which, you know, that's kind of an interesting statement. It's a little sex negative.
Totally. Mm. And I think a lot of people don't like the term sex worker.
Why is that?
I think if you're, like, you're doing porn or dancing a lot of times, they're like, well, I'm not a sex worker.
Okay, because they don't want to be
associated with... And I'm not saying this is for everyone, but I've just heard people say that before.
Right, because they don't want to be associated with being a prostitute or a call girl, right? Because they're like, no, I don't actually provide sex. I provide,
Like, I provide sexiness, or I provide, you can watch me masturbate. That's not really me having sex with you.
Yeah.
It's but it's interesting how we're like, okay, this is what sexual energy is about. So something I've been really thinking about, because the tantric people are really into, this isn't sexual energy, right. This is life energy.
Right.
And we're exchanging life energy all the time in conversation. And I feel this way, particularly with my radio show, where I'm like talking about sex and I feel it's like really like, whoa, and we're talking about something and we all really agree. And whoa, we're like talking about the most amazing thing. And we all come up with the, you know, whatever it is. And there's this like moment of connection where I really feel like we are sharing energy. Mm. Like in the same way that you feel like you're sharing energy when you're having sex with someone. I mean, and you certainly can have sex with someone when not sharing energy with them. I'm not saying it's good sex, but it certainly can happen. So like, what is this about, like, this division between, and of course there's the whole idea of what is sex. Like, some people think that a good shoe shine, what is that, the boot blacking thing,
right? Yeah.
Right, that's a sex act for some people. But yeah, it has to do with the connection. Yeah. And like the eye contact between the two people and the boot blacking can just be really intense. Mm. You know.
Yeah,
totally.
What is sex? What is sharing sexual energy? You know, and how do you commodify that? Where do you commodify that?
I mean, that comes back to your question about your own desire. I mean, the question of commodity comes, if you find someone that really knows what they want, then there's a value attached to that. And then you can start having, then the economy comes in. But until you find people that are empowered around their own desire, then the economy isn't really there. And the question of what is sex either becomes something that is like shown at you on TV or something. Oh, that must be sex then. Mm-hmm. Or it just sort of like disintegrates somehow. But that question about what is sex is such a beautiful, profound, powerful question. And I think it changes again and again and again, depending on obviously who you're talking to and, you know, how they feel. But eventually the only meaning can come from the people's desire, you know, their individual personal desire. Sex for me is X, sex for me is Y.
Right. And we're really limiting ourselves by saying that sex is only penis, vagina, intercourse, or sex is only oral sex. And a lot of people say, oh, I only had oral with them, it wasn't really sex. Isn't that funny? And it has sex right in the name, oral sex. And then if oral sex wasn't really sex, then how could lesbians ever lose their virginity? You know what I mean? Like, there's all these different things about like, what is sex?
Yeah,
well, you know, doing
it's only sex if you come,
right? It's only sex if you come. It's only sex if you do it with a boy. It's only sex if you
I've done
penetrate,
like,
whatever.
Like youth at Lyric, the queer youth center, we were talking about what is sex, and it's really funny. It's fun to ask like 18 to 22 year olds, like, what is sex?
Right. And you think there's an answer. Like, they're like, oh, I know what sex is. Well, do you?
Yeah. It's you get some real good answers.
Right.
And they were like, well, does scissoring work? And I was like, well, what do you mean by work? Do you mean like achieving climax? Do you enjoy it? Like, there's a lot of things.
Do you achieve pregnancy? Is that the only definition of sex is? Like, you have to become pregnant at the end? I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, we are out of time for the show. I just realized. Oh, Maxine Holloway, Lily Ally, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Monica.
Yes. Yeah, so you can check out Maxine, maybe Google Cum and Glitter at some point.
Go to MaxineHolloway.com. That's my hub for everything. You can find out when I'm on kink.com. You can find out about Cum and Glitter.
And women's POV.
And the womenspov.com.
And Lily Ally, do you have a website?
I do. It's lilyally.com. LILLYALLY.
Excellent. Thank you both so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Monica.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.